How would you define white privilege?
I would probably define white privilege as middle class white men making all the decisions that affect this country.
White picket fence, white collar job, I don't know.
The privilege you feel you earn for something you do.
It's a historical head start. My white privilege is not having to worry about things that people that are not white have to worry about. I don't have to be concerned when a cop pulls me over about whether or not I'll live through that encounter. I don't have to be concerned about whether or not I'll be discriminated against in a job interview or in a loan application or X number of other things. What do you think about white?
Well, white privilege, as you said, you know, you get a leg up on the race, but you can go to the park, you can walk down the road and wear a hoodie and not be worried about it. I mean, you don't have to think about it as much. Different guy walking with a hoodie, that there's a completely different look about it. So,
how do you think white privilege affects you?
My ego.
Well, white privilege affects me by allowing me to do a lot of things that people aren't white and aren't privileged can't do. It just gives me advantages that I don't deserve and didn't earn because of the decisions made by politicians or rulers or whatever.
I don't really know what goes on behind closed doors. I think, like, I've missed out on some opportunities myself just due to other issues other than race.
Okay.
I mean, I think I might have got a bit better start than some than due to being white. I don't know. Sorry.
I think it's hard to define it in a very specific way. So it's affected me by not affecting me, and that my race has not affected my life. Like, I've not had anything hold me back due to my skin color. I can't point to, like, a specific thing and say I've benefited from being white here. But I can say, generally, because I have not had any extra hurdles to jump through because of my race, I've benefited in a very broad sense.
You haven't had to have that mental battle of walking down the street. I haven't had to think of that. And so, in a way, it sounds bad, but, like, you got a confidence from it. You don't have to have that mental scare. And so you don't think about it, and so you can walk through life a little bit easier, which is not fair.
One day, Brad will join in.
I hope he does, man. I hope he does.
Instead of just sitting there and smirking.
That's right, friends. That's James Eisenhower's voice back. We got him.
There it is.
We got him. We missed him, but he's here.
We got him off of assignment.
We did get That's him off true. Assignment, but he's got lots of interesting things to say, so we're excited he's back.
I have stuff.
He does have
On
stuff.
On that note, I was disappointed that y'all decided to pick the one time I'm not here to talk about the origins of hobos and all of that stuff. I was disappointed in
that.
We
knew you would be. It was a little backhanded, so.
Yeah,
like to say anything to our listeners about hobos before we move
hobos
on?
Hobos were the transient working. They rode trains from town to town and actually had jobs. So it originally was not an offensive thing. They were actually a working class group of people. But you shouldn't call people hobos anymore, because think of the last time you heard somebody say somebody was a hobo and they weren't trying to be offensive or have negative connotations towards it. It's not the positive term for
right,
someone
but strangely,
in the homeless
it just
community
happened
anymore.
On this podcast when you
it
defined
did.
It.
So,
well, that's good. Yeah. There's your clarification.
I'll hold a lot more back that I would have to say on the subject, but don't say hobo, but it wasn't bad originally.
Good to know.
There's the summary.
Oh man, that's lovely. So James, what have you been up to?
I was in the woods.
You were in the woods?
I love the woods.
I thought you were interviewing like 20 people for our next podcast.
I was. I was finding people in the woods, maybe?
Were they hobos? The answer is no.
See, the what sucks is there's so much potential for offense in what we're going to talk about today. And you went somewhere already that didn't need to be gone to find some offense even before we get into it.
Oh, man, if I wasn't here, I think this podcast would be much, much more boring. So I'm bringing it, man. I'm bringing it. I'm keeping people on their toes.
That hurts a little bit.
What?
Boring you thinking, and what? Less
You just said we're boring. You said that me and James would be boring.
Yeah, because we wouldn't offend as many people, I guess.
Exactly.
Oh.
Exactly. It would be, it'd be offense like and reading the encyclopedia.
Entertainment are synonymous to David.
All right.
I think there's a healthy line. I like to get real, real close to it. And speaking of healthy lines, when you're learning about being white, there is a very healthy line that you need to get to, because if you cross that line, people shut down and get really offended.
Do I sense a segue?
Yeah, I didn't even write that down. It just happened. It's amazing. Bam, bam, bam. So today's topic, Brad, what are we talking about? And should people keep listening?
That is a two-part question. Yes, people should keep listening. And today we are talking about white privilege.
Heyo, whiteness. What is that? I'm pale.
That's true. You are.
That's it. That's
all I had to offer.
That's all you have to offer. Thank you. Because I know Brad's just going to laugh.
I mean,
and,
I figured since Brad and I are not the entertaining ones, I would just say the bare minimum so you could keep going.
So white. So freaking white.
Not always. If you're in the sun for 10 minutes, you're pink.
I am. 20 minutes, and I'm red as an apple. That's the transition. I guess whiteness, white identity, that has the possibility of really offending some people. And I think it's a very normal reaction for folks who are white, because most of us, I would say even more than the majority, didn't grow up talking about being white because we didn't really have a lot to talk about.
So as we get into this subject, before we do, to help people step away from the keyboard to already begin typing angry comments back to us before they even hear what we have to say, I think it's good if we establish what we're not trying to say in this realm.
Ooh.
Right? Because I know that when people hear white privilege, they instantly are feeling some strong emotion for the most part, like most groups will, either aggressiveness or defensiveness, one of the two. I can understand why that's the case. But I feel like we should clarify some to try to avoid as much as that as possible.
And also be okay with those feelings. If you haven't talked about this at length with anybody, or if this is the first podcast or anything that you've heard the word white privilege or people talking about it, if you are feeling angry or upset, it's because it feels like you're being attacked, and right. It feels like your beliefs, because I think this is closely wrapped into our core beliefs of who we are. Because if you think you're an American and someone says, well, you're also white, and then they start attacking whiteness, when they say white, what you're really seeing is, hey, this is my American identity that you're attacking right now. You're attacking what my family has done in the past and how hard they've worked and how they've gotten to the point that they've gotten to, and then spent a ton of time investing in me and teaching me to work hard. And what you're doing right now, or what it sounds like you're doing, is attacking me. And that's not what we're trying to do. What we're trying to do is educate and help people slow down and maybe think through some different language and perspectives that maybe they weren't brought up around.
Right. I'll do my quick covering of what I'm not trying to say when I say white privilege. And that's that white privilege does not mean that all white people are bad people, or that they are racist, or that they have easy lives, or that they've had everything handed to them, or it's not a claim that you should feel guilty or that you have actually personally done something wrong at all. It's not a claim that other groups have not done bad things, that other groups have not enslaved people or done other horrific things to limit or subjugate other people. It's not a claim that white people are the worst and everybody else is good. There's not those stark lines like that. It doesn't work like that. There's not always a good guy and a bad guy. That's not the point. So I'd say that's not what we're trying to say, or at least I'm not trying to say.
I think that we can all agree with that statement, James.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
I mean, Brad hasn't, but whatever. He is in Oklahoma. You can't trust him.
And I will state, if you haven't seen pictures of us or can tell by our surnames, we are all white American men that are talking to you right now. So yes,
that is true.
It's solely 100% accurate at this point.
So David, who are we talking to today?
Yeah, so today we actually get to hear from my old boss from the University of Texas at Austin when I was there. And his name is Phil Butler. He has switched jobs since I was there. And he's still working in student affairs in a higher education role as a support for student programs. And he's a coordinator there. He basically will do anything he can to stay in Austin with his partner. And I'm proud of him for that. But I tried to throw him some softballs, maybe some tougher questions about whiteness and white privilege, and I think y'all are going to really enjoy this interview. So without further ado, here's Phil Butler. Well, hello, Phil Butler. It's been a while.
Yes, it has. Yes, it has.
I'm so glad you could join me today.
Thanks for having me.
We can talk about something that's fairly awkward for almost every white person on this earth, and especially me still, and I went to school for it.
It doesn't have to be awkward.
It doesn't.
I think we make it awkward. And like most awkward things, the more time you spend doing them, the less awkward they get.
That may be the ticket right there. We may be able to end this interview right now. Because the more we talk about it, the more we talk about anything, I guess the more comfortable we're going to get. And with this whole race or white identity or white privilege, that's something that white people just naturally don't talk about that much at all.
Sure.
Why do you think that is?
Why don't white people talk about white privilege?
Or even whiteness. Doesn't even have to be white privilege.
Well, we're not forced to as the dominant culture in American society. And I think it's really important to talk about that this is really an American problem for the most part. I mean, certainly it's a problem in some other countries where the majority is Caucasian or white or whatever label you want to put on it. But, you know, if you spend any time in a place where most of the people don't look like you, you become the other really quickly. You know, if you go to Japan or if you go to Africa or India, you're going to stick out like a sore thumb.
Right. And so do you think, I mean, man, we could chase some rabbits here. So like you put up that example, would you say that the power structure is this whole white identity, white extremist / white excellence just doesn't happen in another, you would say, in another place where you're just not seeing as much whiteness?
I mean, all I know is my own experience growing up in the States. So I don't know. I'm sure there are power dynamics anywhere you go. It seems to be that here, a lot of it is tied to racial identity, maybe more so than other places. But it feels like people of color have some of the more menial jobs in our society. And, you know, if you go other places, like, everybody has all the jobs, right? Like, there are blue collar workers who look the same as CEOs. And I think some of the complications we have here is representation. You know, what does that look like? But I mean, yeah, it is a little bit like chasing rabbits, and you kind of go off in all directions. And you know, if you really just focus on the white piece, which is very difficult because we all have multiple identities, right? There's where we come from and how educated we are and how much money we make and are we able-bodied, are we older, younger. You know, you're never just one of your identities. You're always experiencing all of your identities simultaneously all the time. So I think that that's part of the puzzle that's hard. But specifically for white people, you're never forced to come to terms with your whiteness unless you spend time with people who don't look like you, or you take it upon yourself to go on that journey of like thinking about what does it mean to be white and what does it mean that I have privilege or don't have privilege because of something I have no control over. I think a lot of people get stuck there.
Sure. And, you know, thinking about my personal experience, which is, I think with this conversation, it's a good starting point for folks who haven't started talking about whiteness, that are white, et cetera, being comfortable, not comfortable, being okay with the fact that like, I didn't spend my entire life talking about my whiteness because like you're talking about, I wasn't forced to because of this privilege that I haven't technically earned.
Mm-hmm.
So giving yourself, would you say giving yourself a little bit of leeway and understanding that it may be uncomfortable the first time you start talking about it, but it's probably going to get better in your experience?
Yeah, you know, I like to talk in analogies and, you know, kind of liken it to learning any kind of skill, right? If you don't know how to swim and you're older in life and, you know, there's plenty of older people who don't know how to swim and it's like kind of embarrassing. Like, you don't want to talk about it. Like, how did you get to be 25 and you don't know how to swim? And like, it's scary to get in the water and it's scary to test the waters. But like, the more you do it, the further you go, whether you're doing strength and conditioning, whether you get a coach, like these are all things that you can do related to your identities. You know, you can get a mentor, you can have conversations with people. Now, granted, you just can't walk up to somebody on the street, or maybe you can. Some people are pretty bold, but I wouldn't.
I wouldn't
just
either.
Start talking about your whiteness. But generally, it's a good idea to be, you know, in a safe space and establish some guidelines, particularly because when it comes to these topics, people get very personally invested, right? You're talking about who you are as a person and who you are seen in society, and there's emotions wrapped up in that. There's a lot of, we call it stuff, right? That comes along with unpacking some of these issues. So, you know, I think it is a good idea to kind of know, hey, I'm doing something that's testing my boundaries a little bit. Like, take a moment to like understand, hey, that I'm gonna feel a certain way about this and be okay with that, right? Like, if you were gonna go skydiving, you know you're gonna be scared,
right?
Like, it's something that you like can prepare yourself to experience. If you're gonna be talking about your whiteness, particularly to people of color, it's, you're gonna be uncomfortable and you're probably gonna say something that offends somebody, and you're probably going to experience some pretty strong emotions, and that's okay. You know, I think that that's a whole other part of this puzzle too, is like, it's not okay to be emotional, especially for men in our society, right? Like, so to talk about how you feel openly to others who aren't like your significant other or somebody that you're particularly intimate with isn't something that we're encouraged to do.
Sure.
So I think, you know, the societal barriers, you know, we've already talked about several of them. They just pile up and up. And that's a big, big piece of why we don't have these conversations, is because there are all these barriers. And it's just easier to not get over them than it is to address them or try to work through them.
Yeah. So let's slow down for a second and think back to the first time you either had the opportunity to talk about this for yourself or were forced into the conversation. What do you remember from that?
So there's this article by a woman named Peggy McIntosh. It's called Unpacking the Invisible Knapsack.
We're going to talk about it on this podcast. I love it. Just referenced it.
Great. So I went to the Change Institute, which, you know, you've been to also. It's a three-day retreat for students at the University of Texas. And we spend the whole weekend talking about social justice and different identity issues. And I remember being a senior in college, and one of the things that they did there was kind of like this skit based on Peggy McIntosh's article, where one of the actors in the skit had a backpack, and she had all the stuff in it that signified her white privilege. And one of the things was a check. And it was like a big check that she had gotten from her parents or something. And she just like had dropped it on the floor, or like lost track of it. And like just wasn't a big deal. And I think as somebody, my own personal upbringing, I have privileged identities, all of the privileged identities in America, except for socioeconomic status. I'd say I was lower middle class growing up. And for whatever reason, when they got to the part about the check, I thought about my girlfriend at the time, and she would get checks from her parents and she would lose them all the time, and she'd have to tear her room apart and find them. And then seeing this skit go on, whereas this is a situation that happens in my everyday life, and like I always like, I don't understand you, how you can lose a check. And then to see it like as a symptom, quote unquote, sure, of white privilege, it just like dinged me on the head. Like, wow, there are people in this world, regardless of skin color, regardless of, you know, all their other identities, like they're not going to lose a check, because if they lose a check, like they're going to lose their place to sleep, or they're going to lose the ability to eat. And that was an experience that I had growing up, and also in my experience as a college student, and to kind of see that play out over the topic of race, it just like kind of hit me like a lightning bolt, and like started to put all the pieces together. It's like, oh wow, like she does have privilege in that, and like regardless of whether or not it's because she's white or not, that's not it. Like first you kind of have to understand like what privilege is before you can start like applying all the different labels to it. And so like I feel like that was the moment I really understood privilege. And I think the only way that I was able to do it is through the lens of like the one identity that I didn't have privilege in. And that's why it's so hard for like rich white males, right, who are straight and Christian, because unless they form, I have this theory that unless they form meaningful relationships, it's kind of like the American History X example. Like unless you form a meaningful relationship with the quote unquote other, you're going to have a really hard time trying to understand anything from their perspective. Yeah. Empathy or just even like, you know, everybody's got that one fill in the blank friend. Like I've got a black friend, I've got an Asian friend, and I'm like,
yeah,
you know,
I collected, I don't want them all, bad to happen. I've got them all. I have all those friends, man. I'm perfect. Yeah, I'm set.
You've got the whole set. But, you know, but can still harbor very racist, very anti whatever feelings toward a particular ethnicity or gender or, you know, any other identity. But it isn't until, you know, you start to, I believe, form those meaningful interpersonal relationships with people who aren't like you in different ways that we start to make headway, you know?
Yeah, it seems like you have to hit that threshold of personal relationship with someone where they're going to start, especially if they're a person of color in this example, start letting you into their world a little bit. Because regardless of how much an individual cares about you, if you represent something that they have been hyper aware of, so let's say like whiteness in comparison to someone, a person of color, I feel like it's not something that they're going to, unless they have been trained or if they're on a mission, are going to naturally be like, hey, by the way, I want you to know what it's like to be me. Like, I feel like I'm going to go ahead and take time out of my day to let you know what this experience is like. And some people will do that. But when you're talking about developing that relationship, I think that personally in my life has helped me because they've helped me. Right. Like they've helped me understand from whatever perspective that I don't have that they have. And it's expanded my ability to empathize and to understand and hopefully not be as much of a, I don't want to say problem, but as much as somebody who's just encouraging the system that we live in, that power dynamic.
Well, and I think we have to be careful about putting the impetus on people of color to teach white people about these issues. So, you know, I think that those personal relationships are kind of like the door to the issue. And then once you walk through it, it's up to you to read books, watch documentaries, question the truth, quote unquote.
Right.
Ask questions from a place of caring and not curiosity, if that makes sense. Because I feel like a lot of times this is used as an example, like, oh, let me touch your hair. You know, you see a black woman and like, oh, you know, and like, that's a place of curiosity. And that's not the same, I feel like, as trying to unpack what it must be like to be a woman of color or gay or any other targeted identity in our society. So the relationships are part of it, but definitely you're going to do the work on your own.
So here's the tough question. Why?
You haven't asked a tough question yet?
Nope. You're doing great. Why would it be advantageous for me to do that work? So, and I'm being, that me is in quotations.
But sure.
If I'm, for anyone. If I'm listening to this, why can't I just write this off as liberal propaganda that's trying to get everybody to, I don't know, fall in line?
Well, that's just it. You can, right? As a white male or a white person in our society, like that's the...
Right?
that's
so
the
you
rub,
have
right?
that option. That is privilege.
Exactly.
I have the option not to do my homework and just to go on and stay in my bubble.
Right. You have the ability to walk through life and in the States, go just about anywhere and not have to think about your whiteness, because chances are, unless you're going like to an African American church or like, you know, a Hindu temple or whatever, like you're probably going to be in a place where most of the people look like you. But that's not the case for people of color in this country, you know, especially, you know, my background's in higher education, you know, that's where we met. And unless you purposefully go to a historically black college, a lot of students are forced to get a degree or their higher education in a predominantly white environment. So I can't pretend what it's like to be a Latino male on a college campus where most of the people are white, but like they are forced to think about their brownness or their blackness. They don't have a choice, you know? And every person of color pretty much that I've ever like had real conversations about this with always has an example of a time that they went into a store and they were followed around because like they thought that they were going to shoplift. Like, almost every single one of them have some story about interactions with police officers in a negative way. And, you know, if every single person that I talk to about these issues has a similar story, like this isn't just like, oh, well, you can't mansplain that away or white-splain that away, right? Like, oh, you must have like done something sketchy, or like it's like blaming the victim. Like if every single person is experiencing this, like clearly there's something systematic happening here.
Patterns are difficult to ignore.
That's what science is all about, right?
That's what they say, but, you know, I grew up Baptist, so we're not allowed to know what science is.
Social science is a little trickier sometimes.
All right, so now here's a fun one. To the best of your ability, do you remember a key point or something that jumped out of you kind of mentoring and coaching me through maybe those first conversations / the Change Institute, especially with my sometimes not erratic but excitable nature and my personality? What do you remember from those first times of us sitting down and me being, you could tell like, oh God, David's going through it right now. Like David hasn't been confronted or had to think about this whole white privilege thing, and he's right in the middle of this graduate program where he's going to an institute that's going to be with a bunch of students of color as they're telling their stories. And I don't know, it was obviously jarring, exciting, transformational for me. But what did you see, I guess, from your perspective? I think reflecting on that may help some of our listeners understand better maybe like how drastic this change could be for an individual when you take the time to learn about it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of literature out there, and there's certainly, you know, identity development theories that kind of talk about like what the stages are, and people who work in higher ed are really familiar with that kind of stuff. But to the layperson, like probably the psychological theory that most people are familiar with is like the five stages of grief, right? And it works similar to that. The stages aren't the same, but
But you saw me going through the five stages of grief, Phil. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I mean,
you're like, oh God, denial, fear,
yeah,
anger, acceptance.
Right. Yeah. I think people go through that. Like most, in my experience, most white people who start to come to terms with their whiteness, the first emotion is guilt. And a lot of people don't get past that. I was raised Catholic, so I'm impervious to guilt.
Perfect.
at this point, for the most part, my mom's still pretty good at guilt tripping me every now and then. But yeah, I think it's just like any other, it can be an overwhelming emotional experience to come to terms with the fact that you have this unearned privilege that other people in your life that you care about don't. And you start to blame yourself for all the race problems and the history of the world. And, you know, and how could I have been so naive and not to know about this?
Right.
So, you know, the more you kind of like unpack it and look under the hood, you start to understand like what systems and mechanisms are in place, like whether it's laws or policies or there's all kinds of things from tax laws and how neighborhoods are zoned and who could live in what neighborhoods and why, who could immigrate to this country and why. So as an educator and as, you know, a scholar, that's part of what I did was really try to educate myself. And then, you know, once I felt somewhat competent, like try to educate others. But, you know, that there are emotions. And like we already talked about, like people don't like emotions, particularly in public. So, you know, I think that it's just important to like let people be mad, you know, like I think that you were at that one at that same institute, like there was a black student and he like looked right at me and was like, I hate white people. And I was like, you know what? I hate white people too. And I don't really, but like I knew what he was saying and he doesn't really. And I knew I got where he was coming from. And I think that it was more important for me to validate what he was feeling than like get in a fight about like, well, do you really hate all white people? Like, no, when people are emotional, they say stuff that they probably wouldn't otherwise or that they don't even necessarily mean. Or maybe there is some truth in that. And so it takes reflection. It takes effort. You know, it's called social justice work for a reason. Like it's not social justice leisure. You have to work at it every day because the way that we are socialized is trying to keep white people, quote unquote, on top or to have the power. And so empowering others is not the same as white people losing power. Like lifting others up doesn't like push white people down. And
but
I think
it can
that,
feel like that to people well, who are in power, right? Like
absolutely. And we deal in binary a lot. I think that it's human nature. Like you're either this or right. that. And a lot, there's not a lot of gray area. So I think it's a it's logical, but I think it's a flawed logic.
Right. I can definitely see why it's challenging, why it was challenging for me and for others to get past that grief and get past almost a, it's not, what is it called? It's not decision fatigue or whatever, but like when you have so many options in front of you of like, there are so many things that I could focus on right now to try to fix because I feel like I need to do something as a white male at this moment when I look at this system that's broken that I freeze up, right? Like, and sure. I just don't know which way to go. And I think that there's going to be a lot of people listening to this podcast right now who are,
what do I do? What can I do?
This?
How do I fix it?
What can I do?
Yeah. I need to fix this now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think you've already kind of answered that partially in the sense of you need to take some time, do a little research, right? Look at some places online is beautiful because you can get angry at the computer all you want and not be embarrassed to do some of that research. And then the second point you brought up was that once you felt comfortable, you were okay with talking to other, let's say, white students, white guys, especially in your role, people that you had a rapport with. Is that what you're kind of saying? Mm-hmm. Of like, do you want to expand on that?
Yeah. You know, like the first time I meet a freshman, I'm not going to be like, hey, let's talk about your whiteness, you know, unless.
Because they're probably not there.
The pretense, but yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Unless it's like a, hey, come talk about your whiteness at 8 o'clock tonight.
Yeah.
But, you know, going back to your point about like educating yourself, this was in the olden days when like YouTube didn't even really exist too much. Like, you know, nowadays, they're, you know, depending on who you're friends with, there are a lot of really good outlets that break down what these things are in really clever, entertaining ways. So if you're not the boring research journal type, you can easily, I'm sure you could go to like, what is white privilege in YouTube right now? And there would be like 1,000 videos, and some of them would probably be good and some of them would probably be crappy, but that's YouTube. There are lots of avenues to educate yourself. And then I think it's also important to spend time in the community or in communities. But, you know, I feel like you have to do it for the right reason. And I don't have a better way of explaining that. But this system of racism hurts us all. It doesn't feel like it. Like, it feels like the white people get and like everybody else suffers. But actually, it does hurt you. Or like, so you're talking about like what's my motivation? Why should I do this work? Why should I care? That's up for you to figure out. Like, I can try to convince you like this is a good idea, but like ultimately every individual has to make a decision for themselves. Like, hey, this is important enough for me to spend time, effort, energy in doing. And that's, again, it's white privilege that you get to even make that decision. I don't have a great race example, but I have a really good feminism example and like how the patriarchy hurts us all. And it's really trivial, but it's something from my real life and it's a real example. I do a lot of photography and I spend a lot of time editing photos. And one of the things that takes the longest to edit is like stray hairs and like women's hair. Like if we're shooting outside and like they'll have like, you know, just like a few strands in the wind that are like sticking out. And you're like, you know, if you want to make the picture look perfect, you like edit out those strands. But like the fact that they even, so here's how, you know, and that can just be like it. I can, okay, I'm editing these hairs and that's it. But for somebody who's spent time doing this work, you start to have thoughts of like, well, why am I more worried about the women's hair and not the men's? So they have to have this long hair. Why do they have this long hair? Like, I don't know. That's just like the way that it's set up. And they spend a lot more time in the bathroom getting ready. And like the amount of time that usually when I'm doing portraits that I spend on a woman is significantly more time than I spend editing on a man. And that's 100% because of the patriarchy wanting women to look and have a specific look to them in our society. And then there's also like body images and beauty, but that, you know, trying to keep it at the base level. And that's just, it's a tiny, tiny, really insignificant way the patriarchy hurts me, because I have to spend extra time editing these photos of these women, because when they get the photos back, they're going to be expecting to look away because they have their own internalized sexism about what their picture is supposed to look like and what they want their picture to look like for other people. So I know that doesn't have anything to do with whiteness per se.
No, but I like it. I like it, especially in the sense of like, all right, we all have, especially as men, we all have women that we care about, right?
Ideally,
hopefully you're not a woman hater, but in that sense that like, it's easy to think of like, all right, so if just guys win in this example, then who is that hurting? If you're having trouble caring about somebody besides yourself, at least think about your mother, right? At least think about your sister if you have one, or, you know, your girlfriend, whatever. It's that, right? Like, it's thinking about, does this hurt somebody outside of me? And why does that matter? And you got to find that answer for yourself. And hopefully it's well, I want to be a better human. Like, there's a humanity component to it.
Sure.
And that reaches out to, again, those many different identities. Like, we're talking about white identity in this podcast, but like, yes, it matters. Think, slow down and think about somebody that it matters for.
Right. And, you know, to take it back to whiteness, you know, I think that to live in a world where you don't recognize your white privilege keeps you from establishing meaningful relationships with people who don't look like you. And some might argue that they don't want to, and we live in a society, in a country where you don't have to, quite honestly. But who wants to live like that? If you wanted to live like that, like, go hang out in your bunker and
live on an island with people who look like you and think exactly like you. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And good luck living on an island where there's all white people, unless you're going to England. So like,
it's super dreary there. I mean, come on. I love it. Well, in summary, Phil, I think this has been good. Hopefully our sound is great and we don't hear that beeping in the recording. And if we do, I'm going to ball my eyes out and call you again.
We could do this again. Yeah,
I know. I wouldn't hate it. So in summary, if we have some folks listening to this podcast who identify as white, this is the first time that they've really taken the time to be like, this white privilege thing isn't something that was made up. This is something that exists. What would you tell them? If you were in their shoes, what would you tell them to do?
Like if they're like just kind of starting to...
Yeah, and they're interested. They've listened to the podcast this far through and they're like, hey, I want to learn more. I'm interested. What would be your next steps for them?
That's a really good question. I mean, I like entertainment, and I think that's a good way. Like, get some good documentaries. Race, the Power of Illusion is an excellent documentary that was done by PBS a few years ago. I know that was a big eye-opener for you, watching that documentary.
Absolutely.
I mean, anything PBS does is really phenomenal, usually. So maybe start there. Or, you know, if you want it to be more funny, like Dear White People just came out on Netflix.
Yeah, just watched the first episode. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it'll blow your hair back.
Yeah.
So maybe start there. Like, if you do have really good, close relationships with people of color, get to a point to where you feel like you can have a real conversation about some of this. Like, and again, like we said at the beginning, like knowing you'll probably step in it and say some ignorant shit at some point.
Right.
But that's, you know, you can't learn unless you make mistakes, and you're going to make mistakes. You're going to make somebody mad. That's life. Like, but get over it. Like, that's kind of how I feel about it. It's going to be uncomfortable, and just step into, like, lean into the uncomfort, you know, and
growing pains.
Trust. Yeah, exactly. Trust that it'll all work out in the end.
I love it. Well, that's great, Phil. Thanks, man.
I don't know. Yeah, no problem. It's certainly not an easy thing to talk. You know, it's something they're going to bring up during Thanksgiving dinner. Or maybe you will. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure that's going to go well. Depends on how woke your family is, I guess.
I guess, yeah.
Hey, Mom, why didn't you talk to me about unearned privilege because of our skin color?
Well, not actually, we didn't really talk about this either, but that begs another important thing to talk about is, you know, if you are white, chances are you probably have close relationships with lots of people in your life who are also white, who aren't quote unquote woke. And you're going to have to reevaluate those relationships, you know, whether it's that uncle that always says racist stuff or your partner or your mom or your dad. You know, once you unpack the knapsack, like Peggy McIntosh talks about, you can't pack it back up. So one of the ways that I live that out of my life is just calling people out whenever they like say something that's racist or sexist or whatever ist. And most of the time people don't even realize like that they're being racist or sexist because it's so ingrained in our language and our culture. One of the ones I call people out on the most is when anybody says that they've been gypped, and like people don't usually know that that comes from, you know, gypsies and like being tricked out of something in a deal with a gypsy. And like when you start to explain that, you're like, oh yeah, also did you know that like gypsies were persecuted just like the Jews during the Holocaust? And like, it's not like, would you say that you got Jewed? Like, is that a term that you would use for somebody that tricked right. you out of something? No, of course not, that's racist. Well, then saying gypped is just as bad. And then they like start to think about why. And like, I think that that's an easy one to start with, because not a lot of people know gypsies, and
or
you know,
feel like they have skin in the game and they're committed to that. They're like, I love that part of my vernacular, and I'm going to say gypped a lot, and I'm going to fight you
right.
over it.
Right, exactly. You know, there's no religious, you know.
Right.
You could say the same thing for like using the word gay, but you know, there's the like, well, you're infringing upon my religious right to persecute the gays because God told me to. Yeah, I don't think that's what God said.
Yeah. a faith-based podcast, we also do not say that God told you to hate the gays. Yeah, we're not comfortable with that. Not at all.
Depends
that's
on
somebody
which,
else's
which,
voice, man. I don't know whose voice that
which
is.
Church you go to, yeah, I guess.
That's
I
angry know, Jimmy. It's angry Jimmy that you're hearing. It's not God.
Right, yeah. So, but anyhow, back to the point. Yeah, I think that's an easy one to start with, because like you said, there's not, the stakes are super low.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Well, Phil, I think that's all the time we have. And by all the time, I mean, you need to go see a movie in a bit and get all freshened up and get stoked. Say hello to Chris for me. Love that guy. Love me some Chris Pratt.
Yeah.
I really liked his point at the very beginning, and in fact, you reacted to it when you, you know, when he was pretty much like, you just got to have the conversation and just go for it, you know? Like, I thought that was
like
really...
Like, anything takes practice, mm-hmm. and, like, the fact, I think we're taking a step forward by having a podcast about white privilege or whiteness. Like, we are not experts. We may not know 100% of what we're talking about. We're talking about what we've experienced personally and what we've learned and gathered from an information standpoint, but anything's awkward the first time you do it if you don't have experience right. with it. And talking about white identity is especially awkward since the majority of us haven't been forced because of our privilege and where we're at to really talk about it at right. length. And I think a lot of our listeners, if they identify as white, are probably in that same boat unless they've been forced into situations where they've had to talk about it.
Right.
Right. I actually had a conversation with somebody the other night who's also a white guy, and he was saying how he feels like during the Obama administration, Obama and other people made the division of race worse. I was like, no, he just said these are problems that are there. Like, it's I think that's a big sign of privilege to have a spotlight shine on something that's already been happening for a long time, and to be able to say he just made it worse when all it was being like, hey, you know how like y'all been racist for a long time? Like, whoa, don't make us racist. Well, we didn't. It's just the system that's there.
It's a really good example of, listen, we've already put that under the carpet. Like, we've hidden that. Like, we don't want you to talk about something and bring it up because that makes us uncomfortable and that makes our situation worse, where I feel like we fixed this to be comfortable for us, you know?
Right.
But yeah, I think that I like that somebody you spoke with said that, because I think a lot of people in the white department for sure feel that.
America's like a JCPenney's.
Dude. Yeah, take a left over there.
I like some privilege. Do you have some privilege? Yeah, just go to the white section.
Yeah, go to the white section. Everything's a little bit more expensive and people are real, real proud of it.
Right.
I did hear a quote that I thought was interesting. You know, when you're in a position of privilege, equality feels like oppression.
Yep.
Which is, I think, what we've seen recently. I think that's the reaction that people are starting to see, is when things are starting to equal out a little bit, a lot of people feel like they're being oppressed suddenly. And that's obviously not the case. Nobody's asking for the white community to lower where they are. People are just asking to come up to where the white community is. So I just found that quote to be really interesting and very poignant, especially nowadays with what seems to be going on.
I think a large part of the pushback, though, is because people don't want to accept white privilege because of like a false definition I feel like they have with it. So, I mean, I feel like we should clarify some of this, because I've watched a lot of videos and read a lot of blogs and stuff and articles on people claiming that white privilege doesn't exist. And I feel like a lot of their reasons for saying it aren't even on the subject that we're talking about. And so I feel like clarifying white privilege is probably a good idea. When we say white privilege, we're not talking about white people being bad people, not talking about white people being racist, not saying white people have easy lives, or we're not saying that white people have had everything handed to them, or that they should feel guilty. This has nothing to do with blame. This is not an accusation that all white people have done something wrong. Like, that's not what this is at all. And it's also not a claim that no other people group has done something bad, that, like, no bad things have happened to white people. I get that there were white slaves, too. I get that. I get all that. That doesn't mean that the system is equal for whites versus other people.
One of the other things I was going to try to do is I was looking up statistics to kind of... And so I did some research, because the thing that always gets thrown out there, you know, is the GI Bill that happened in the 40s, which is interesting because, you know, my grandfather was a veteran, so he would have been a part of that. And so I wanted to do a little research on what that actually did. Now, I had heard it on like 13th on Netflix and things like that, but I had never actually done some research. And some of the things that I found interesting was that things such as wealth generation don't happen necessarily overnight. They happen typically through generations, multiple generations. And so why something like the GI Bill is such a big deal, which if people don't necessarily know, what the GI Bill did is, yes, all veterans were given the opportunity to go to college and were given the opportunity to buy a house. However, there were systems where Black veterans could not buy houses in certain areas, in the suburbs, essentially. They couldn't buy houses in the suburbs because they either A, couldn't get a loan, or B, there were, you know, the banks just refused to work with them there. And so what would happen is over time, a white veteran would buy in a suburb and a Black veteran would buy in the inner city. Well, over the course of 40, 50 years, over decades, property value in a suburb has quadrupled and the property value in the inner city has maybe doubled, maybe. And so over time, wealth has been generated. So when James refers to it's not something that somebody necessarily did, or it's not something that white people is doing, I agree, that's not what we're saying. But what we're saying is over time, this has happened, and the white community was assisted with the GI Bill and other bills to gain wealth. And wealth generation causes, you know, creates a lot of power. And so,
and that's just one example, and that's one of many, many. We're not going to go into the many, many systemic examples of rules and systems that were set up by the people that were in power. And all you have to do is look at the last X amount of presidents, right? Like, if you look at people in power, if you look at, I don't know, how about the percent of CEOs in major corporations that aren't white males? I don't have that statistic, but I'm pretty dang confident it's a really, really low percentage of CEOs that are not white males, right? In major companies. Let's be real. Looking at presidents, same thing.
I think it would be great if we had all the answers and could just say, hey, this is white privilege and this is what you need to do to fix it. But that's not realistic at all. And this is definitely one of those issues where we aren't trying to say we know everything or that we have fixes and answers. It's more of just trying to say, hey, look, there's a problem. We all need to figure out what to do about it. Because we don't have the answers, but the only way we can get to an answer is if at first we at least all accept that there is a problem.
Yeah, and one of the neat things that Phil talked about on the interview is educate yourself, right? Like, James, you've already done some research, taking steps forward to understand what other people's experience may be that aren't in the majority identity class. So we're talking obviously about race in this episode, but it's understanding what other people's experience may be due to something that they did not earn, right? And that's why we keep using the privilege term as well, is that this is not something you earn. You're born into it. You're born your specific sex. You're born either heterosexual or gay. Like, there are different things that come into place that you don't necessarily decide on, right? I think it's important for spreading your awareness and understanding of this entire world as much as possible. Like, if the more we learn about other people's experiences, the more well-rounded we are as humans on this earth, right? I think it's easier to love somebody if you have even a little bit of an understanding of what they may be going through. It's not like you have to sit them down, and Phil and I talk about this in the interview. It's not like you have to sit them down and quiz them from a point of like, I'm really curious. Like, it's more of doing your homework and trying to figure out what's their worldview like, what do they experience versus what do I experience and how is it different? Because they have value. Like, right. That's the thing. I mean, I say that very confidently because I have to believe that, like, they do have value. People that are different than say you, do still have value, even though they may not look like you or act like you, etc.
Right. And the thing is, both sides of the argument should educate themselves. Because I know it's something common where we feel like one side is right, and so everybody needs to educate themselves to their side. But realistically, as people who believe that white privilege exists, if we don't actually try to look into why people think it doesn't, how can we actually communicate? Because we can make arguments all day long, but if it's not communicating to what issues people have, they're not going to hear it. So both sides, to enable the conversation, really need to see where the other one's coming from. And it's also one of those lead by example kind of situations.
For me personally, like, I spent a large majority of my life not knowing what white privilege was. Like, I understand what it feels like to not know what white privilege is, because I've lived in blindness for the majority of my life. And I feel like people of color spend the majority of their life being forced to talk about race because they're in a minority group. And so that's why I'm like, I don't know. I mean, yes, it's important to know both sides. It's just we are, as white males, by definition, blind to white privilege until we educate ourselves, because we don't have to know about it. It's just, we don't.
And I get that, but I guess what I'm trying to say is every time people really need to communicate and understand something that's going into an argument, so like a lawyer or someone on like a debate team, anything like that, you have to understand the other side to be able to communicate what you need to communicate.
Right. I'm just hoping that it doesn't have to be an argument. I think approaching this conversation...
You can hope so. And I'm not saying I know,
but
it has to be an
argument. It helps with tone. It helps with the way that you approach that situation. Like, it helps with all of those. If you don't come into it saying, oh, I'm going to go into an argument with this conversation.
And I get that. I guess what I'm saying is, like, to make sure it's not an argument, knowing where the other person is coming from really helps in that.
Yeah.
So to be able to have conversation, to be able to actually breach this subject, which is a difficult subject.
Absolutely.
You should really know both sides.
From the example you're giving, James, you're talking specifically about approaching other white folks and having this conversation. Is that true or false?
Right. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that, okay, people sweet. Who would not agree with white privilege.
In that example, for sure, man, it's, again, doing... And Phil points to this as well. I'm so glad we had Phil on. Is pointing to, like, you've got to do that homework on the side to do that, which is what you were saying, James, in order to, like, at least have a decent idea of what's about to explode in your face. Because this is, talking about whiteness is as emotionally charged as talking about politics, because it's part of your identity, right? Like, it's part of your core. Even if you don't call it whiteness, like, folks who haven't talked about being white are going to be like, oh, I'm American in the United States. Like, that's kind of the go-to. It is wrapped and supercharged, you know? So when you're, like, ripping those Band-Aids off, or these, you're basically ripping their house that they've been putting together for the last X amount of years, like, it's going to be charged. And I think it's okay that's going to happen. And, like, letting them have their space or whatever is needed. Like, Brad, I remember the first time we talked, like, you were upset. Like, and naturally so. You're like, what is this liberal propaganda? You didn't say that, but like...
Yeah, I remember what you're talking about. And I mean, I remember where we were. And I remember what it was about. It was actually about Arizona law, the immigration law. And you were out in California, you were visiting me. You know, I remember we were sitting in that bar and we were discussing this, and I did. I got upset. And looking back on where I was saying was the ignorance of privilege coming out, because to me, being pulled over and asked for an ID is like, okay, whatever. That meant nothing to me, right? Because what's going to happen, you know, unless my license is expired, nothing's really going to come out of that.
Right.
Right.
They assume you're a citizen because of the way you speak, the way you look, et cetera.
Right. And that was something. And part of that, too, was probably radio stations I was listening to. And, you know, whatever else was in my life at that particular time. But, and even then, it took until maybe couple years ago before I actually even really started looking into it and trying to figure out what it was all about. So, you know, it's not exactly a short education by any means. But.
And it's almost you had to find that point where you wanted to go after this information yourself, right? Like you had to find that, like, okay, I care enough to learn a little bit more about this, knowing that it's going to probably piss me off or knowing that it's going to make me uncomfortable. And I bring that up, meaning like we can't force people to have this conversation. If they're not, like if you're not ready to explore this, like there's nothing I can say that's going to make you go after it. So with that, we've solved all the world's problems. Thank you guys so much for
so clicking in conclusion, on and downloading. Vote for Toby.
That's hilarious. Oh my gosh. All right, so now we get to take this beautiful time to talk about how you can follow Everything Is Okay on Instagram. Just kidding, that doesn't exist. What does exist? We have a website. I know that. We're on Twitter.
That would be great. And Instagram. What else do you want people?
What else do you want people to do? But you can follow us on iTunes, which is really important.
Yes.
Reviews are really important because it helps other people who don't have a personal relationship with us find our podcast.
Right.
Reach out to us on Facebook or Twitter because we love to hear from y'all. And we have heard from a number of y'all and we'd like to hear from more of you guys. So that'd be great. Anything else, Brad, you want to throw out there?
I did have a guy yesterday on LinkedIn, believe it or not, that got a hold of me for a totally separate reason, but in his message to me and the direct message said, so I just started listening to your podcast recently and, you know, I got to say it's interesting. I really like it. And I was like, that's cool. All I could think to do was like, dude, thanks. It's such an honor for you to listen. So I just wanted to kind of pass that along. Like for anybody who is listening, it's such an honor for you to even take an hour out of your day to listen to the three of us talk about whatever the heck we're talking about that week. So thank you for that. If you feel like it, it'd be an honor if you'd pass this along to one of your friends and say, hey, these guys are at least being honest about whatever topic it is and trying to be authentic and real and trying to give our honest opinion. So
heck yeah. So that website for us is www.everythingisokay.net. Check that out. And then I wanted to give one shout out. Everything Is Okay actually made it onto another podcast, guys. I don't know if you knew this, but a good friend of mine, Vince Faber, has a podcast with a buddy of ours named Luke Smitherman, and it's called You Almost Had It. They basically try something new every week and do a podcast on it, and it's super hilarious. But they gave us a shout out on their last podcast. Yeah.
Oh, that's so sweet of them.
We're giving it right back to them because that's very sweet of them. And their podcast is actually, I love it. It's real, real fun. So Vince is the personality.
It's funnier than bleeping words, right?
Yeah, it is. It's funnier than bleeping words, although bleeping words is very, very humorous.
One of David's favorite things.
Beep. I do love a good bleep, man. I do love a good bleep. But shout out to them. They're awesome. Love those guys. And Vince has the personality I always wish I had. So there you go. So with that.
This is the Everything's Okay podcast. I'm Brad Stair.
I'm David Meggs.
I'm James Eisenhower.
And everything's okay, people.
She never tells me what to know. She never shows me where to go. Oh, she never holds back a thing from me. Yeah, she is a Bayou City beauty. She only takes what she wants. Never break you, but she will taunt. Oh, she surprises even me. She is a Bayou City beauty. Oh, oh, oh. close this border. Red dirt behind me, getting closer to her. Who would you drive this far to see? Other than the Bayou City beauty, she'll take you to the brink, believe in. Closer to her, who would you drive this far to see? Other than the Bayou City beauty. Driving, driving, every night I feel like dying, dying. Oh, my timing's not right, I know she knows. She don't understand that I know she knows. She won't show her hand, love on wide. It gets so hard to keep a lasting fire. Oh, and the hardest part is
love me some Chris Pratt.
Yeah.